That item, do you have to replace the physical item, or rather you have to pay and reimburse the monetary value of that item? This is the question that I want to handle today. This question has many ramifications and also very, very unique questions that we will deal with, and it's a very fascinating issue. In general, I spoke with several lawyers, and they all told me that in secular law, usually we would decide that the loss according to its monetary value and not according to the physical value. And we'll see that according to Jewish law, it's not that simple. You'll see opinions in that one idea, people that say the other idea, and it's very, very interesting to see. And we have also very interesting questions. I'm again attaching the source sheet in the chat, and also the people that are now joining us. So please register in the chat, and we'll have the records that you have been here in our shiur today. Okay, so again, the question that we are dealing with today is how to measure loss. Do you have to replace the object, or do you have to replace the monetary value of that item? And we'll see some very interesting questions. The first question that I want to address is that what happens if someone damages an expensive etrog? Etrog is a type of fruit. It's called, I think in English, citrus, and we use it on holidays as an article of mitzvah. We use it in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Arba'at Aminim on the holiday of Sukkot. So we use four species of fruit. One is etrog, one is lulav, one is hadas, one is arava. And usually the etrog is very expensive, it's very nice, it's very pretty, it's very beautiful. Some people spend a lot of money on their etrog. And you can buy etrog, citrus fruit, you can buy it in a large variety of prices. I bought for myself last Sukkot etrog for $100, and I could have bought one in around $30. And there's a large variety of prices for the etrog. And again, it's an article that you use in order to perform a mitzvah. And the story is, that the question that we're going to address is, what happens when someone damaged his friend's etrog, and now he wants to pay it back, he wants to replace his etrog, and he says, listen, although that you had a very expensive, very nice, big, nice etrog, but still, you only want to perform a mitzvah. So here, I'll give you a simple etrog, a simple fruit of citrus, and then you can use that in order to perform your mitzvah. And I don't have to pay you back an expensive, big, nice etrog. You can have a kosher etrog. You could use it. It's very well. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't be disappointed with you because you did the mitzvah. And that would be enough. Is that true? Can a person just pay back a simple etrog, a merely kosher etrog, or he has to pay back the monetary value of the etrog? And if it was an expensive etrog, he has to pay him back with an expensive etrog. What do you think? I would love to hear ideas. Someone? Is someone interested in giving his opinion? Again, the case is that someone damaged his friend etrog. This question could be not only regarding etrogim, it could be regarding any article to perform a Jewish ritual, a Jewish commandment. It could be his etrog, it could be his matzahs for Pesach. So let's say he damaged an expensive etrog, an expensive box of matzahs. Can he say, listen, I'll just pay you back with a kosher etrog? It's not. Mendy's asking whether it's the first day or the second day. I don't think it matters, but actually it's a very fair question. Let's say it's the first day. So that monetary value given to the beautification of the mitzvah has to be recognized. That's what Mr. Skosowski says, that you have to take in mind the beauty of the mitzvah. But according to...
I said you pronounce my last name very well, but you can say Paul.
Skosowski was much more challenging. So
I have to say I'm very impressed.
Thank you very much. So you say that you have to take in mind the beautification of the mitzvah. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Lord, doesn't mind. I don't think he should mind. He's seen that you made an effort. You tried to do the mitzvah with a beautiful etrog. And you paid the money. Okay, but now As long as you're doing the mitzvah, who cares if it's a beautiful etrog or not? As long as you're performing the mitzvah, and he saw the effort that you're putting in doing the mitzvah, so who cares? Okay, so how should I replace it? Do I have to replace the object, or do I have to replace the monetary value? And the divine, the Lord doesn't care how much you spend for it. I mean, it's very nice of you of doing that, but listen, you put your effort, and he will say, listen, you perform the mitzvah in a terrific way. Maybe that's enough.
No, but when you are giving money, that means I added tichah.
Yeah.
I have to go buy and look for it again. I've already spent hours looking into it, so I don't want no money. Replace it. You go do the same work what I did and replace it to me. Replace my loss. That's the way, I mean.
So what is the loss? The loss of the money or the loss of the object? And that's actually the question that I want to address today. And this is one of the ramifications.
Besides going definite or lesser, logically, it's the object. What you cause damage, replace it, however you get it.
Yeah. I actually asked a lawyer this.
But it's the same object. In other words, if you replace it with an object of lesser quality, is that the same object you're replacing it with?
Yeah, but the question is, can you measure quality in performing a mitzvah? I asked a lawyer this question. Maybe he has some kind of secular law equivalent. So he said that let's say a person has a car and he uses his car to go to work. So would one think that I damaged his car that happens to be a Porsche? I damaged his Porsche and I'll just replace it with a Honda just because his purpose of the car is to go to work? Of course not. But I said that there's a big difference because the Porsche also rides better, drives better, and also it's nicer, and you're trying to present that you have a nicer car and so it's more comfortable. But here, you want to do a mitzvah. You want to perform a mitzvah, and you gain the exact same thing with a beautiful, big, expensive etrog. The same way when you have a small etrog, a small and not expensive etrog. So I think it's not the same thing, like a car that takes you to work. Okay, so let's try to answer this question. I'm reminding whoever's joining us, please register in the chat. I'm again sending the source sheet, and we'll try to answer this question. And the question is, again, if someone damages an expensive etrog, may the vandal repay with an etrog that is merely kosher? So this question was already raised a few hundred years ago in the 15th century of Germany by a Rav called Rabbi Moshe Mintz. And he says as follows, it's in source number one. I'll read the translation in English. Please forgive me if the translation is quite simple. I translated it myself, so I hope it is clear. I also brought the original Hebrew. I didn't introduce myself, so I'm also from Israel. So I'll try to do my best to speak in English as best as possible. So in source number one, Rabbi Moshe Mintz, he brings a story as we brought. Reuven bought a nice big etrog in a high price. Shimon came and damaged the etrog, and now has to buy a different etrog for Reuven. Reuven claims that Shimon should reimburse him with an expensive etrog, and Shimon claims that he has to replace the etrog with a kosher one, and not necessarily with an expensive one. So how does Rabbi Moshe Mintz, how does he rule? I think Shimon is right. Shimon is a person who damaged. And he says, you can give a merely kosher etrog. You don't have to pay him the monetary value. You just have to replace it with a different etrog. And it's kosher. He can perform the mitzvah. That is enough. That is what we need. Only the article to perform the mitzvah, but not necessarily the monetary value. And he brings some proof. He brings some evidence from the Talmud. And I'll say it. I won't read it out. I'll just explain it to Balapé. By heart, I'll explain what he says. The Gemara says, the Talmud says, in Masechet Baba Kama, that a person wanted to bring an offering to Beit HaMikdash, to the temple, during previous years, long, long time ago, a few thousand years ago. So we used to bring offerings in Beit HaMikdash, in the temple. And you could bring an offering called Ola. And the Ola, you could bring it in several ways. You could bring it either by giving an ox, and they would offer the ox to Hashem. Or you can bring something cheaper, a lamb. You can bring a fowl. But you can bring it in several ways. If you bring an ox, it's very nice because it's very expensive. The Talmud says, a person dedicated his ox and wants to bring his ox to the temple. He wants to offer it. And now someone stole it and damaged it, and he was caught. And now he has to pay back. Does he have to bring back an ox? Or you can say, listen, since you're giving the Ola offering, so I don't have to give you an ox. I could give you a lamb. I could give you some fowl. The Gemara says, the Talmud rules and says, the person, the vandal who damaged or the thief, he could just pay him and give him a lamb. He could give him a fowl. He could give him a chicken. He doesn't necessarily have to give him an ox. Because listen, you want to give an offering? You have several levels of offerings. You could give the offering with a lamb, with a chicken, and not necessarily with an ox. So I don't have to pay you with an ox. That's how the Talmud rules. And if the Talmud rules, so we don't argue with it. And says Mara Mintz, says Rabbi Moshe Mintz, the same thing here with the etrog. Since the Gemara concludes, I'll read it out in the source sheet. In the last three lines of source number one. And the Gemara concluded that he can reimburse him with a lamb. Although the person bought an expensive ox in order to perform the mitzvah with excellence, still he will be reimbursed with a lamb. The same thing will be here. Although he bought an expensive etrog, it can be replaced with a kosher small etrog. So, Rabbi Moshe Mintz rules and says that the same thing, if a person damaged his friend's offering, his ox, listen, you want to bring an offering to the temple? No problem. Take a lamb, take a chicken. I don't have to pay you back an ox. The same thing is with the etrog. I damaged your article of mitzvah. I damaged your etrog. I'll just give you a kosher etrog, a cheap one, and it'll be kosher, it'll be fine. You can do the mitzvah, and that will be enough. Not the same thing. Very good, Mr. Farkas. You're not the only person who thinks that way. The same idea is also in Rabbi Tzvi Ashkenazi Hirsch. Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Ashkenazi says it's not the same thing. But before I read him out, I want to hear why you think it's not the same thing.
Because there's another benefit. When you have a nice esrog, people see it, you have a lower, something else, you bring it to the korban, it's in there, it's out of your hands once you give it.
Uh-huh.
Same benefit from it. You
know, okay. So
I don't understand now, whatever it
is. Yeah, so Mr. Farkas is saying very, very clearly, and he knows very well Jewish and human psychology, and he says the reason why you bought the pretty etrog is not only to perform the mitzvah. You also like to walk around it, show it to your friends, see what a shiny etrog I have. Shiny in Yiddish is a beautiful. It's beautiful. So you say, I have a shiny etrog. I have a beautiful etrog. Look and see what I have. So
just to give a joke. So when a woman wears, I hope I'm not going to get in trouble, wears the mink coat, it's not because she needs it. Yenis or Brennan, or someone else should just be jealous of the coat. That's a Jewish mentality.
Okay. So say, I have another value other than performing the mitzvah. I also have a beautiful etrog, and it's a symbol of my status. It's like having a Porsche. So some people show their wealth by having a Porsche, and some people show their wealth by having an etrog. Okay, I hear. It's very, very interesting what you're saying.
Rabbi Mann.
Yes.
Taking it out of the etrog and the ox scenario, and for the moment, you're at a lahayim. You're dressed semi-casually, and somebody's behind you. It's crowded, and they talk wildly with their hands. And they're also holding a glass of red wine. And the red wine leaks the glass and enters my shirt. Shirt can't be cleaned. He says, no problem, I'll replace it. The shirt is, you don't know this, it is $150 shirt. Sounds good, right?
and it comes back to me with a $29.95 polyester shirt. Is that one of the same replacement? No, because I told them where I got the shirt. I sent them a picture of the label.
Uh-huh. So you're saying, listen, the shirt has a purpose of wearing a shirt, so I'm fulfilling it by just giving you a simple shirt. Can it be that I can
say, so my shirt back.
Well, your shirt won't get back, but you want $150 worth shirts, because I mean, or maybe the same one that you bought in the store. So I think it's different in this case, because a shirt, first of all, you have if it's more expensive, so it's more expensive for a reason. Either it's more comfortable, or it's nicer, it fits you better, you look nicer, and also you're presenting to people, listen, I'm a wealthy guy with a $150 shirt. So, okay, I hear that. But if we're discussing with something that its only purpose is not to present your wealth or some kind of comfort or some kind of additional value, but only to perform a mitzvah, so maybe I shouldn't take in mind its monetary value and only the to replace the object.
But it's the same thing as what George just said. It's the statue.
Oh, okay. George says something very interesting. That Yeah. So to be honest, unfortunately, I agree with George, and the mentality of people is also to show, listen, I have a nice etrog, and I assume that maybe is the logic of the rabbis who disagree with Rabbi Moshe Vince. However, they don't say that idea, but I think they say similar ideas, and we'll see in a moment. But I think it's a very good point. But I brought this.
You can judge people more favorably, that they're not worried about what other people are seeing. When you hold that beautiful etrog and you shake it and you look at it and pick it up, you get the hana there. So never mind, what other people are seeing.
Yeah, I understand. Okay, let's see. Very good, very good. I'm reminding everybody to register in the chat. If you write your name in the chat, that is more than enough. But please, if you haven't registered yet, so please register now. Again, I'm going to send again my source sheet to whoever joined us later. And here's the source sheet. And please register. Okay. So again, we're dealing here with the question: if someone damages an expensive etrog, may the vandal repay with an etrog that is merely kosher, or he has to reimburse him with the monetary value? And again, we're trying to explore here and know if someone damages an item, does he have to replace the item, or does he have to replace the monetary value? Sometimes the item is replaced only with its monetary value. But we have certain cases that, listen, you don't need to have an expensive etrog in order to perform the mitzvah, allegedly. So because of that, maybe it will be enough only to replace the item. This is one ramification. And indeed, Rabbi Moshe Min says that in the case of an etrog, the only purpose you have with an etrog is only to use it for the mitzvah. You can use the mitzvah also with a kosher one. So indeed, you can replace it with a kosher etrog. He brings proof from the case of a person that brought an olah offering in the temple, and he brought an expensive ox, and the Gemara ruled, the Talmud ruled, and said that you can reimburse him with a lamb, because its only purpose is for performing a mitzvah. So in that case, you can perform the mitzvah also with something which is less expensive. This is, again, the idea of Rabbi Moshe Mintz in source number one. In source number two, Rabbi Tzvi Hirsch Ashkenazi disagrees with Rabbi Moshe Mintz. He brings his ruling and he says that he is mistaken. And I'm reading it out in the English translation in source number two. And I think he is mistaken, because in the case of the offering, the ox is worthless and cannot be sold. As the Gemara says in Psachim, a person who sells his olah and shlemim offering did not do a thing. And since it is unsellable, you cannot demand the man to reimburse with the ox's market worth, rather only the replacement of the mitzvah article and enable him to perform the mitzvah. He says, listen, you cannot learn from the case of the offering because of a simple reason. The Talmud says that once a person dedicated his animal for an offering, so he can no longer sell it. It doesn't have any market. He cannot sell it. He's prohibited from selling it. And even if he sells it, so according to Jewish law, the transaction doesn't take place. He now dedicated his ox for an offering, and now he wants to sell it to his neighbor. He cannot do so. He cannot sell. So in that case, the offering doesn't have any market value. Its sole purpose is only to perform the mitzvah. It's to perform the commandment of the Almighty. But if something has a market and you can sell it and you can gain money from it, and it has another purpose other than performing the mitzvah, like in etrog, that you can sell it to your friend. It has, in Israel, there's a thing called shuk arbat manim, the four species market, that you can sell there your etrog. So in that case, you have a market, so it has another value other than performing the mitzvah, and you have to take that value in mind. And in that case, you have to reimburse the person that you damaged his etrog and pay him the full amount of the etrog. As he says in source number 2, and because of that, he can pay him with a lamb. In the case of the offering, he can pay with a lamb because he can't sell his ox. But in the case of the etrog, since the etrog has a value that can be measured in the market, he has to pay its full amount. The same way in case where someone stole, he brings another example. He says, let's say someone stole an expensive Sefer Torah. Every three times a week, we read from a book, a Sefer Torah. It's made out of parchment. It's very, very expensive. And you also could buy a Sefer Torah for $60,000. And you could buy a Sefer Torah in $300,000. So he says, if someone damaged his friend's Sefer Torah, his expensive Sefer Torah, would we think for a moment that can be replaced with a cheap, regular, kosher Sefer Torah just because he can't perform the mitzvah with that Sefer Torah? That cannot be. He says, since articles of mitzvah have a value in the market, you can sell them, and it has a value in the market, so you have to take that in mind, and you cannot merely just give a kosher article of mitzvah. You have to replace it with its value. So he says you cannot learn from the offering because in that case it has no market. But in the case where you have a market of that article, although you have it in order to perform a mitzvah, you have to take in mind the loss of the monetary value and not only to replace it with a different item. Okay? Is everything clear? Very good. Very good. Very good. So Paul mentions Mendy's question regarding day one or two, hence has relevance, as the market price would have diminished by that time. Very, very good. Very, very good. So since the question that Rabbi Ashkenazi is placing against Rabbi Mintz is so hard, because it is a very good chiluk, it's a very good distinction between the case of the offering and the case of the article of the mitzvah. So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, in source number 3, he says that maybe we have to say that the question that Rabbi Moshe Mintz actually brings, it is in a case that you can no longer sell the etrog. It doesn't have any market value. And when is that? When it is already Yom Tov, when it is already a holiday, and during the Jewish holiday you cannot buy things, you cannot do kinyanim, you cannot do business transactions. So because of that, maybe we are actually discussing this case that you can no longer sell the etrog. It doesn't have any market value. Either it's Yom Tov or people already have their own etrogim. So because of that, says the Maharam, it means I could just reimburse him with a kosher etrog. But if this thing happens a few days before Sukkot, before the holiday of Sukkot, and indeed you could sell it and gain profit from the etrog other than the mitzvah value, so in that case, yes, you have to pay its full amount of money. So again, the question that I wanted to explore today is whether when someone damages an article, an item, does he have to replace the item, or he has to replace the monetary value? We saw that according to Rabbi Mintz, in the case of damaging an expensive etrog, you don't have to replace the monetary value, but rather you only have to replace the item, and that will be enough. But so you see from here that you have to only replace the item. But Rabbi Tzvi Ashkenazi and Shlomo Auerbach say, no, since it has a value in the market, so in that case, you have to reimburse with the full price, with the monetary value, and not only with the item's physical presence. So you see that this thing is a machloket between two opinions. You have two opinions. In the response of Dayan Yehoshua Ehrenberg in source number 4, so he says, since we have two opinions, so every Dayan, every rabbinical judge could rule however he thinks is right. He does mention that the majority of rabbis think, like the Chacham Tzvi, the second opinion, that you have to pay the monetary value because it has a market, and since it has a market, so in that case, you have to pay its monetary value. Okay? Is everything clear? Does someone have questions before I go on to the second question that I want to deal with? Yeah, I'm reminding, please, that whoever can register in the chat, so you should do so. Okay, so let's carry on to another question. I want to not address the second question, but rather to address the fifth question that I brought in the source sheet. It's from source, I think, 14 and on. I'm skipping to question number 5, but question number 5 is a very, very important question. and all the questions that I brought, I found it very hard to find a secular law that somehow discusses it. But question number 5, it is a very big issue. And that is, when someone damages an item with sentimental value, how do you reimburse him? Do you have to pay him at all? Or do you have to... Are you exempted of paying him? So, when I'm asking about sentimental value, I'm asking, a person has an old photo of his great-grandfather, and I came and destroyed the photo. So this thing doesn't have any market. It doesn't have any market value. You can't sell it no place. It doesn't have any market now. So in that case, do you have to pay him back or not? Do you have to somehow reimburse him because you lost him the item? Or you have to reimburse him with the monetary value? And in this case, there is no monetary value. So because of that, you shouldn't pay him. What do you think is the law? And what do you think is the Jewish halacha? The Jewish law. Does somebody know? Again, damaging an item only with sentimental value. Does someone want to say his opinion? Someone ruined your family heirloom. You should pay a market value. How can I pay the market value? What is the market value of...
There is no market value.
Of what? Of
there is no market value.
There is no market value. Yeah, because...
It's very subjective.
No one is interested in buying the photo of my great grandfather. I'm sorry to say, he was an extraordinary person, but wasn't famous enough. So if there's no market value, so maybe we shouldn't pay at all. So I found a very interesting article that actually discusses the law about it. The article is I found it in the website of a law firm in Indiana. So unfortunately, I don't know the Canadian law about this. But it's a very interesting article. Please, if you want to read it entirely, it's very, very interesting. They say that actually there are different opinions. There are different opinions among the states. Most states, if you see it under question number 5, I think it's in page.
There's no pages.
There's no pages. So it's page 4. It's above source 14. So they say that most states have addressed the issue, have found that sentimental value is not recoverable for the loss of personal property. You cannot measure it, and you can't recover it. So in that case, you shouldn't pay for it. But Indiana, in certain cases, has recognized a limited set of circumstances that allows for the recovery of sentimental value. One key of determining whether sentimental value may be considered for recovery is whether the item is devoid of any value other than sentimental value. They brought a very interesting case. The judge in Indiana, in a certain case, he distinguished between a family heirloom that you inherited. In that case, it's worth only its sentimental value, as opposed to a person who won races. And because of that, he got rings. He won a race, and he got a ring indicating that he won the race. So he says that since that you can somehow measure, other than the sentimental value, the blood, sweat, and tears that he put in order to win the race, in order to win the championship. So that is something they could also measure, and because of that, you could somehow bring some sentimental value to the trophy, to the ring. But in cases that it's only sentimental value, so that it's a family heirloom and you miss your grandfather and something like that, so in those cases, the court ruled that you don't have to reimburse it. So this is according to at least American law and the law in the state of Indiana. I asked the lawyer, what is the law in Canada? He's supposed to sometime come back to me with an answer. He didn't bring me an answer yet. But what does Jewish law think about this? So before we learn about sentimental loss, there's another issue we need to address, and it is brought in Source 14. And there's a very famous Rabbi Yaakov Loberboim. He wrote a book called Netivot HaMishpat, The Ways of Law. He lived in the 17th century, and it's a very, very important book in Jewish law. If you want to show that you're that you know his book, so he's nicknamed the Nesivus. So if you go to certain yeshivas and say, yeah, the Nesivus says this and that, so I'm sure that some people might be impressed. So the Nesivus says in Source 14 that something that cannot be sold and it is worthless to all other than the owner, the person who damages does not have to pay. He says a very, very interesting statement, indicating that if a person has an object that's worth only to the owner, for the rest of the world, it's worthless. No one would ever buy it from him. It's worth only to the owner. In that case, does the vandal, does the person who damages, does he have to pay? Says Netivot HaMishpat, Rabbi Loberboim, no. That since it's worth only to the owner, in that case there's no market and you don't have to pay for this item. And now with this statement of Rabbi Loberboim, certain rabbis and rabbinical judges wanted to say, in that case, let's say I harm your passport. Let's say I harm your ID card. I harm your diploma. Personal items that don't have any market, that the only person in the world that could actually enjoy these items are yourself. So in that case, I won't have to pay for it. If I spill wine on your $150 shirt, no one is going to buy from you that $150 shirt. If it's worth only for you, maybe in that case, according to the words of the Netivot HaMishpat, I don't have to pay. What do you think? Is that possible? That I harm your clothes. I spilled wine on your shirt. So I don't have to pay for it because no one is interested in buying your shirt. If I ripped your passport, so in that case, I don't have to pay you?
You could differentiate if there was any money involved in producing that item. Okay, if something became bad, I have a picture of you, like you said, your grandfather, someone else did it, I didn't invest anything in it. But if I had to invest my time and effort,
Very good. I also see that Mr. Gershuni, I think it's Mr. Gershuni, and Gershuni says to me that passport has value. Yeah, that passport has value because in order to produce a passport, you have to pay for it. But again, according to the words of Netivot HaMishpat, he says that once that only you have the value of this thing. I mean, it's unsellable. It has no market for you. I agree. You had to spend money in order to get the passport. But now, this thing doesn't have any market. And according according to the book, Netivot HaMishpat, once this thing is worth only for you, this passport, which is now already produced under your name, so you're saying the passport value is $100. It takes $100 to produce the passport. But now in the market, this passport is nothing because no one will pay you $100 for your passport.
You'd be surprised.
Yeah, unless it is a criminal or a spy. Yeah.
I think the passport's very different than the old photograph because the passport can be replaced.
Very good.
There's a cost to replace it. So that's at least that time and effort and cost to replace should be...
Very good. Very good. Very
good. I don't know what you do with them. I'm supposed to have them.
Yeah, very good. Very good. So we'll see. So that is the distinction. But again, according to the book Netivot Mishpat, one wanted to argue that according to his opinion, maybe in the case of passports or your personal items or your shirt or let's say even someone broke a window in your house. So according to the market, if you will now sell your house with a window, without a window, it doesn't make a difference because the market doesn't care if it has a window or doesn't. The house entirely is $4 million. Okay, after I replace the window, I don't care about it. But again, is the thing measured? Is the item measured only by its market value? Okay. And again, I'm apologizing that maybe I have some mistakes in English because I'm Israeli, but that's no excuse. Also, Israelis have to learn English.
A lot of this, I don't really think, applies in Western civilization, North America, 22nd century, because if one were to cause, if I was playing baseball and went through your family room window, you'd expect that I get your window replaced. You're not paying the $600. The same thing in with technology today, that picture of, your great-grandparents probably could be healed in such a way that at least it would be there. Might not be the original photo where the smoke went off, but you'd have the picture.
Yeah, but it's not the same picture. It's not... there is some kind of sentimental value that is the same picture that my grandfather held. Okay. I hear, and don't worry, also, it's not only a modern civilization in 21st century in North America. Rabbis throughout the ages disagreed with Netivot HaMishpat, and they said also, according to Jewish law, the market is not enough. It's not only the question whether you can sell it to others or not, but also the money that you have to put in order to get that item. As the Chazon Ish says in Source 16, Rabbi Avraham Yeshayahu Karelitz, he lived in the beginning of the 20th century, a very, very distinguished rabbi, and he said, according to the Talmud in Source 15, I won't read it out, I'll just explain what he says. The Talmud says that if someone brought an offering, and the priests in the temple, for some reason, disqualified the offering. I won't explain why, but now you cannot bring that offering. The commentator, so the Talmud says, they have to pay the owner who brought the offering. And the commentators explain, even now that the offering is disqualified, and the people who brought the offering don't have to bring a different offering instead. They wanted to bring this offering, but now they don't have to bring something to replace what was now disqualified. The priests still have to pay the people who brought that offering. Why? Because they're upset. They are upset that now their offering that they spent money on bringing is not, it won't be offered in the temple. So although it doesn't have any market, they couldn't have sell their offering. They couldn't have sell anything. But now they spent money in order to bring an offering. And now the offering is not offered, still they deserve to be paid. That's how the Talmud says. So says the Chazon Ish, he says, you see that something that has value only to the owner is still considered that he has damaged and lost the owner. So he says that we have sources already from the Talmud indicating that although you cannot sell it to other people, but since you've spent money in order to get something, to get some kind of service, and you didn't get that service, and now you cannot use the thing that you paid for, because of that, says the Chazon Ish, that still you have to pay him back, the priests have to pay him back. So he says that the idea of the Netivot HaMishpat, that even though it doesn't have any market value, and people will not buy it from you, still you have to reimburse him according to Jewish law. And because, and also in Source 17, Rabbi Urbach says that in Hebrew, leshalem, to pay someone, is the same root of The word lehashlim, to compensate someone, to fill in what has now been taken. So the idea of paying someone is not just paying the value, whether he can sell it to somebody else, but how much it is in order to lehashlim, to fill in what has been lost. Okay, so he says, don't worry, Jewish law is the same thing as 21st century North America. Okay, that's what he says. And according to that, Rabbi Asher Weiss, in Source 18, he's a contemporary rabbi, he's a rabbinical judge in Israel. I had the great honor of doing internship in his Beit Din in Israel. And he says, given to the above, according to the Chazon Ish, I think the halacha is as follows. He says in Source 18, it seems clear that a person who damages friends' items that don't have any value other than for himself, such as passports, ID cards, driver's license, personal documents, and contact lenses, again, things that are only for him. He can't sell to somebody else. The damager has to pay how much it costs to buy these items, because all these items are usable, and the owner paid for them, since they are usable, and the owner paid in order to get this passport, so it has a value, so they have a value. Although the owner can't sell them to others, still, it's sold by the people who manufacture these articles. So you see from here that something that, although only you can derive benefit from it, and other people would never buy it from you, since it costs you money in order to produce these things, so because of that, there is a certain value, and you have to pay in order to fill in the this thing.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
What about damages? You gave the example of a passport, but what about damages that may flow from it? Let's say someone has to travel for his parnasa, and he can't for that very reason. So a passport may cost whatever, under $100, but what he may have lost may have been in the tens of thousands.
Okay, that's a very good question. There is a concept called, in Jewish halacha, grama, meaning it's indirect damage, and it's a very, very, very large issue. In most cases, in Jewish law, grama is putter, meaning he's exempted and he doesn't have to pay for it. So if I burn someone's passport because of that, he cannot fly. So the fact that he now lost the value of his ticket, so it could be considered as grama, and he is exempted from paying for it. There is another concept called garmi, which is although it's indirect damage, but it is more direct than the regular grama. In certain cases, they'll be chayiv. Your question is a very good question, whether it's considered grama and he is exempted, or considered to be garmi. And in that case, he will be chayiv. He will be obligated in paying. It's a very, very interesting question, what you're asking. I think it is grama, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure, because it could be actually be grami, and in that case, he would have to pay him. But very, very good question. Very good question. But now we're discussing items that have worth only for its owner. So now, from this question, is sentimental value the same thing? It's something that, for me, is priceless. If you ask me how much would it cost me to buy a family heirloom, I'm willing to pay for it $1,000, $2,000, $100,000. For me, it's worth a lot. Is it the same thing like your passport? Is it the same thing like your personal contact lenses that are manuscripted and that are manufactured exclusively for you? So in this case, it seems to be different. It seems to be different, and I brought in Source 19 a book called Mishpat HaMazik. It's a very contemporary halacha book written by a Rav called David Brizel. And it's a very, very nice book. And he says that no, sentimental value in the Jewish law is worthless. There's nothing. You cannot measure sentimental value if it's something that the only thing that you have in your hand is its sentimental value, a family picture, a family heirloom. In that case, if someone damages it, he doesn't have to pay how much it is worth for you. And explains why. I'll read the footnote. Footnote 31. The explanation is, why is it that sentimental value is not considered anything in Jewish law? that also for the owner, the explanation is that also for the owner, the item is not of high value, for he didn't pay much for this item. So first of all, this thing is not... One second. Okay, I'll address it later. The question here in the chat. He says that, first of all, also for the owner, this... You didn't pay much money in order to acquire this photo. As opposed to the passport or the contact lenses, you had to pay a lot of money, a certain amount of money, $100 for the passport or $1,000 for the lenses. You had to pay money for in order to get it. In the family heirloom, it's not necessarily that you had to pay a lot of money in order to get this item. You just inherited it from your father or from your grandfather. And also, he says, again, I'm in footnote 31. And also, if he would like to replace this item, he can't buy it, even for a lot of money. So you see that even according to the owner, this item isn't worth much. Let's say I pay you $1,000 for this heirloom. Can you now buy a different picture of your family? No. You cannot replace it also with a lot of money. So why should I give you that money? You can't replace it. And you yourself didn't have to pay a lot of money in order to get this. The owners might be willing to pay for the item not to be damaged. It could be that the owner that is now holding his wedding album. So he said, "Listen, I'm willing to pay you $1,000 for you not to damage my album. But since we don't measure this way, the value will be determined according to how much it costs in the market, not according to the owner's sentimental value." So he says. And I think that's also the majority of rabbis who say that if the value is only sentimental and it can be replaced, and you yourself didn't spend money in order to acquire it, so in that case you should in that case you don't have to pay back this thing. So you see from here that if you harm something that doesn't have any value and you didn't have to pay for it. So in that case, if it's only sentimental, according to Jewish law, there is no such thing. So Paul is asking, maybe there might be a penalty to replace it. So in Jewish law, you barely see penalties. A knas, a penalty, is very, very rare. And usually you cannot give a penalty to the person who damaged. So you don't take that in mind. Right, and Saar...
Perhaps not in the courts, but I'm just wondering if someone willy-nilly causes pain and suffering to people by damaging their personal belongings, and then says, "Too bad, you can't get me on this." What kind of a person is this?
Well, he's definitely not a righteous man. That's of course. If you see that there's a person who is doing these terrible things, strictly speaking, the halacha does bring in mind that does take in consideration something very, very important in Choshen Mishpat. I think it's in the second clause in Shulchan Aruch Choshen Mishpat that deals with monetary law. There is a halacha that says that if the judges of that time see that there's something that has to be fixed in that generation, they can now institute and constitute a new law saying you cannot do these things. And Rav Asher Weiss, a contemporary rabbinical judge, says that also in the case of the sentimental value, you should use the power invested in the Bate Din, in the court system, and try to also give some kind of value. So
excellent. That makes me feel better.
Yes. So if today there was some kind of law in Israel that the Bate Din, maybe they would take that in consideration. It's something very, very important that Chazal, our sages, left for us, saying that if you see that there are things that have to be fixed, so you can fix them. Rabbi Asher Weiss says even that he thinks today, Chazal, our sages, would say that person has to be chayav also in grama. Because they see that people are so easily harming others, they would also say that also in the case of grama, you should pay him.
Brother,
yes?
Right, that
interesting note that I sent in the chat, that if the guy did it deliberately, so then with the intent to embarrass the fellow, he thought he had a very expensive thing, and it turned out to be, now look, it's broken, it's nothing. So in that case, you'd think he should have to pay also for the tsar, for the boishas, whatever's happening, because it became a personal injury. It changes from if it was a complete accident.
Yeah, well, tzar, boshet, and all those things that you're mentioning, they are taken in consideration, if I'm mistaken, only in physical damage. Only if I slap a person in the face, so you take in mind the tzar, how much pain was inflicted, and how much boshet, how much he was insulted by this. But using other items, so there's no such thing as tzar and boshet. No, there's no such thing as paying for ugmat nefesh, according, strictly speaking, according to halacha, according to Jewish law. Maybe the rabbis would institute something new, but at the moment, there isn't such a thing. So again, we discussed today the question, when someone damages someone else, someone else's item, so does he have to pay the monetary value or the item? And we saw two cases that there isn't necessarily a monetary loss, but you have to replace it with the item itself. Since I have another 5 minutes until 1:30, I want to just bring another very, very fun question that was brought in the town of Brisk 150 years ago. It's question number 4, if I'm not mistaken. Question number 4. It's a very fun question, so that's why I want to bring it. I'm reminding everybody to register in the chat. It's very important. And the question is as follows. And you see that the question is also dependent on what we are exploring today. Do you have to bring back the monetary loss or the item that was harmed? So the question is as follows. That there was a case in Brisk. An incident happened in Brisk. This is source 13. Source 13. That one person had two old and valuable books. And each book was worth 500 rubles. So a person had a collectible item. Two books. And each book was worth 500 rubles. One came and burned one of the books. And they came to court. One person damaged one book. The person who burned the book claims that since the remaining book's price is now higher and worth 1,000 ruble, it seems that he should be exempted because he didn't lose his friend's money. What is the story? A person had two rare books. Each of them were worth 500 ruble, yeah, the currency at the time. And now, when he harmed and ruined one book, the remaining book became more rare, and because of that, it became more expensive. It became not 500 rubles, it became 1,000 rubles. So the person who damaged it said, listen, I don't have to pay you anything because I didn't lose you any money. You had two books that their value were, that their value were together 1,000 rubles. Now they're not 1,000 rubles. Now, so now you have one book which is 1,000 rubles. So although I lost you the item, but I didn't lose you any money, I shouldn't pay you anything because of burning one book. Is the question clear? Yeah, that is the question. And Reb Chaim Brisk, he was the Rav at that time, and he says it's dependent if you have to replace the item. So you're right, although you didn't lose any money, I don't have to pay you anything. If I have to replace the item, although you didn't lose any money, I still have to give you a different item, so I have to pay for it. Or we say that since he didn't lose any money, so I shouldn't pay you. I shouldn't pay you because you didn't lose any money. So again, you see another ramification with this question: whether you value the loss by replacing the item or by reimbursing its value. It's a very interesting question. Reb Chaim has a very interesting idea. Maybe sometime you could address him personally and I'll give you what his answer. You could also read it. But again, it's another question that is dependent on whether a person has to replace the item or replace the monetary value. That's it. I think we're done for today. Thank you very much. I'll stay here for questions. I'm just reminding everyone to register. If you haven't registered yet, so please register now. And I enjoyed it very much learning with you. Thank you very much.
So, Rabbi Man, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Somebody is making Aliyah. They're moving to Israel. They happen to have a power saw that is in very good shape. And they said to me, do you want another power saw? And I said, sure, it's working well. Everything's good. And I use it and everything's fine. But it cost me nothing. It was a gift. And then somebody else comes along and says, oh, do you have a power saw? Can I borrow it? Do you know how to use it? I say, and he says, oh, yeah, oh, yeah, oh, yeah. And he brings it back to me and it's broken. So I'm not at any financial loss, but about the power saw. Does he have to replace my power saw with exactly the same one?
I think so, because it has a value of money. It has a has some kind of value.
Right, I didn't pay for it, but
it doesn't matter. But since but since you had this item, so I think so. Yeah, I think you have. I think he has to pay for it. I mean, it's not only how much you paid for it; it's also the market value. You take in mind both things, either the market value or how much money you spent in order to get this item. So the rabbis that we brought said, listen, we're taking in mind also how much money you've spent in order to get it. But you of course you take in mind the market value. That is the simple...
The replacement value.
Yeah.
The replacement value. Because the market value for a used tool is going to be less than the replacement value.
So in that case, you have to take in mind how much did it take you in order to obtain it.
To replace it.
Yeah, replace it, exactly. Yeah,
that's what I thought. That's what I would have thought. And by the way, over the years I've learned, I don't even lend the school graduate because people mess them up.
I hear.
All right. Okay. Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.